welcome everybody, well, both of you, here. We have before us just one bill today. We probably will not be here too long today. We'll have some look at proposed amendment to House Bill 2186 in work session, but I don't plan on working the bill. We'll have the conversation. We'll bring it back probably next week, dealing with the reconnect, disconnect, all those issues, federal tax changes. So let me, I don't have any purpose really to be served in the way of the public hearing. Let's just go to work session straight away. Okay. And then also after that, we've got some bill introductions. Yeah, so stick around for that. Let's go to work session on House Bill 2186. And Lizbeth, I guess we'll have you first take us through the amendment that is in front of us and then the materials that you distributed and which are on our desks.
Chairman Shatterly and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. I'll just start talking about the Dash 1 to begin with so everyone's clear what that is. The Dash 1 is, this is going to be changing this bill, and it's going to eliminate then the rolling reconnect to federal law changes. Now, these are the law changes pertaining to taxable income. And then it's going to establish then a date certain to federal law of December 31st, 2002 for all federal tax changes, even if it's pertaining to taxable income. And so it does that by just going through, and then on page 11 and 12, it's deleting certain lines. And in the particular line that is important that makes it the rolling reconnect is the expression there when we say the laws of the United States relating to income taxes as they are amended. So when we're using the words as they are amended, that is the rolling reconnect, and we are constantly reconnecting with any federal law changes. So then we delete that kind of language and then just insert there that they will be the laws of the United States relating to income taxes or the income tax code as they are laws in effect on a specific day, and this date is December 31st, 2002. So that's really what your amendment is doing. And so everyone's clear what this amendment does right now. As far as a revenue impact, it has no revenue impact. And the reason why that is because since December 31st, 2002 and today, we've had no federal law changes that would cause us to connect with anything that changes taxable income. And there would be a minimal fiscal impact on the Dash 1 amendment, just maybe some programming changes for the Department of Revenue. So you have that, too. Now, the next thing I gave you, which I'll just briefly go through, is just a we already discussed this during orientation, is the connection to a proposed 2003 Bush economic plan. And so that's what this table then does for you, is just gives you up-to-date preliminary revenue impact from connecting to the Bush plan. And I've split it out there between federal law changes that are actually affecting Oregon taxable income versus those are then the feedback effects, which are then they're reducing federal tax liability, which then is fed through as far as having a smaller amount of federal income tax subtraction, which then increases Oregon's tax liability from then that reduction in federal tax liability. So with this table, I've split out the top section there. A, those are the federal law changes affecting that will be decreasing Oregon's taxable income. And the first one there is the increase in expensing for businesses. Again, that is increasing from $25,000 to $75,000. That has a revenue impact estimated at $4.1 million in 2003-04. You can see that that is affecting, you know, businesses, corporate and small businesses in the personal income tax system. And then in the personal income tax, the main one that we've talked about before is a double taxation of dividends. And that would have a reduction in Oregon's taxable income of $66.7 million in 2003-04. And for the biennium, then it's roughly about $169 million. Now, I've kind of incorporated then just other provisions that we've seen from the proposals. And the other provisions that are affecting federal tax law, the taxable income component, is that there would be above-the-line deduction for long-term care insurance. There also would be a tax-free IRA withdrawal for charity. There would be above-the-line deduction for teacher costs. And it would expand the tax-free savings opportunities and consolidate employer savings vehicle. So the first one with expanding the tax-free savings opportunity, Chairman Shetterly, that's what you were bringing up last week when we were talking about
right.
the savings account. So we have retirement savings accounts, and then we have also the lifetime savings accounts. So the conversion then of traditional IRAs to these retirement savings accounts, they would be paying tax then on accumulated earnings at the time of conversion. So you're going to be seeing some positive effects then in the beginning from these expanding of these tax-free savings and conversion to the lifetime savings accounts and the retirement savings accounts. So you can see in 03, 04, we're talking like $24.7 million, in 04, 05, $33.2 million, and then it goes down from there. And in the future, that would obviously be a reduction in taxable income. But in the beginning, since you would see some conversion of these traditional IRAs, you would see some additional tax. Now, the other one with consolidated employee savings vehicles, these are basically where it's a proposal to consolidate various types of 401ks and the thrift and the government 457 plans into an employer retirement savings account. And these would have a little higher deferral amount. Employees would be able to defer up to $12,000 or under per year versus the $8,000 cap that they have now. So this also would be a reduction in taxable income. So as you can see there, the total section for all of the reductions from federal law changes in 2003-04 would be $46.2 million and in 405, $73.4 million. And then we take into consideration those increases then in Oregon taxable income from the reduction in federal tax liability. And as we saw with the proposal, initially we're going to see those 2001 economic growth package, all those various changes would be accelerated. So we've got issues like an increase in the 10% rate brackets. We've got the tax rate reductions that were going to go to effect in the future brought forward to 2003. You would see a 15% bracket for the married couples that would eliminate then the marriage penalty right away. We'd also see an increase in the standard deduction, an increase in the child care credit up to $1,000. We also would see a new tax credit for medical insurance, a refundable tax credit for education costs of attaining an alternative school, for attending an alternative school, and also to expand the research and development credit. So all of those considered together, we're looking at about $19.5 million additional tax that would be brought to Oregon in 2003-04 and $15.3 million in 2004-05. And this does go down slightly due to some of the timing changes of when these tax changes were going to go into effect in law already. So the overall net reduction in Oregon taxable income would be for the 2003-05, $92.2 million loss in total income taxes, and 05-07 biennium of $206.7 million, and the 2007-09 biennium, $280
million. All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. I guess it was very interesting information. One thing that's worth keeping in mind, this is preliminary impact mm-hmm. and the proposed Bush plan.
That's
so,
right.
And that's part of the exercise here. We don't know what will happen to this as it goes through Congress. It could effects could mitigate the impact of this or could exacerbate the impact depending mm-hmm. on what Congress does. And that, I guess, is the risk to the states, and not just Oregon. I know all states are going through this exercise, but that's the risk of this rolling reconnection, especially in a time of declining revenues of the state, hitching our horse to that wagon and not knowing what the direction will be taken as we move into our own budget writing period. First, I'm sorry, what else do you have for us?
And Chair Shetterly, just so everyone's clear where everything came from, you also do have just a snapshot of what I used to come up with these estimates, and I used their Treasury estimates, but it's from the Federation of Tax Administrators bulletin, and it's a good summary, just a quick summary of some of the major impacts to Bush's plan, so you can review that if you want. And on the last page is a summary of the nationwide estimates. And then the final thing is just for your own information, I just sometimes kind of helpful for people to see where we are in relationship to other states in terms of federal tax code connection and our starting point versus an automatic or date certain conformity. And this comes from an NCSL recent survey in, I think it was June of 2002. Now, our starting point, as we've been talking about, our connection with the federal tax code is to federal taxable income. And you can see we automatically connect, and there's only five other states that automatically connect. That's Colorado, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Utah, and Vermont. Now, you can see if the Dash 1 amendment was adopted, we would be date certain. We would still be connected at the federal taxable income level, but we would be date certain, and then we would fall into this category of where five other states are, Hawaii, Idaho, Minnesota, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So you can see that there's a tier there of only about a dozen states that have connection at the federal taxable income level. And then a lot of more states connect at the federal adjusted gross income level. And the difference being basically the itemized deductions. And with the federal adjusted gross income level, you're not connecting to all those federal deductions where we at the federal taxable income level are. And then there's only five states there that have no federal starting point at all, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And then you've got the states there that have no personal income tax at all. So just so you have a frame of reference of where Oregon is relative to other states.
Questions? Do you have anything else to go through in your materials? Okay. Questions of Lisbeth on these materials? I guess going back to what we used to do on the date certain, then you've gone through a list of what the proposed elements of the plan are. Under a date certain structure, we would wait for Congress to act, and then in the next session we would evaluate what was actually enacted and elect to connect or to remain disconnected to those particular points on an item-by-item basis.
Chairman Shetterly, that's correct. And I think the important point to kind of remember, too, is right now we've got a rolling reconnect. So say, like we've been seeing, we've had reductions in our tax base. Okay, now if we want to disconnect, we have to have a three-fifths majority in order to disconnect from a reduction in taxes. So this having a date certain would mean that then if we wanted to connect to a reduction in our taxable income, it wouldn't take a three-fifths majority. Okay, but if we wanted to connect to a tax increase that had been taking place at the federal level, it would require a three-fifths majority. It's a little more straightforward, I think, as far as what we're consistently usually needing a three-fifths majority for.
And that's the Dash 1 amendment.
Correct.
Other questions or comments for Lisbeth first?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Fass.
I'm still not clear. Would then it be your intent to have different legislation after this to disconnect from some of the provisions that have been passed by the federal government, by Congress?
That wouldn't be my intent. My intent, of course, what Elizabeth showed us this morning are things that are only prospective.
Right.
My intent would not be to disconnect from anything that's in current law right now.
Okay.
But to make this disconnection, if we go forward, to make it prospective. And so probably this session we wouldn't even deal with those particular elements of the federal plan. But I don't have the intent, it's not my intent anyway, to go back and disconnect from those points at which we are connected as of December 3rd. In fact, this bill would lock us in, would connect us to December 31. Now, if we have other bills later on, or if members want to propose bills that address particular elements of connection points to federal law, we'll sure entertain those, but I wasn't planning on building those into this bill.
Well, I was just a little confused. Last week when we looked at this with the accountants, it was more of a technical issue, and we were going to discuss down the road this disconnect. Do these Dash 1 amendments do that? Okay, that's...
And, Chairman Shetterly and Representative Haas, this disconnects you from future changes, like with the Bush plan. Next session, if the Bush plan, you know, passed, then you would be going through and deciding whether you wanted to connect with, you know, the double taxation on dividends and the, you know, capital expensing and all the different components. Where right now with this bill, you've already connected with, like, the bonus depreciation and all that from these changes.
But then, so then the next session, we would need to come through and say, yes, we do like this, so let's vote for it.
That's right.
It would just be a simple majority.
That's right.
But it would take an act as opposed to just an automatic, you're in.
That's right. Effectively, what the rolling connection does is constitute Congress as a revenue committee of the state legislature in giving them authority to make revenue decisions that affect revenues at the state level. And my experience in the 90s was, I think, when times were good, there was room to facilitate that and accommodate those changes at the federal level. My concern, especially as we see Congress moving into deficit strategies, is that that's going to be harder to accommodate and still maintain our own priorities. Which may be distinct from Congress. I guess I look at this and I see Congress, the congressional action potentially taking $92 million out of the 2003-2005 biennial budget. And that's going to make it hard for us to establish any of our own priorities on top of that revenue impact just of the federal action.
Where, Elizabeth, does this then put the estate tax issue, because Oregon has some issues with that?
Yeah, Chairman Shetterly, Representative Haas, this does not address the state tax issue at all. Okay, that will be a different bill.
We will have a separate bill on the estate tax issue.
We do not automatically connect with federal law changes pertaining to estate tax.
And if we pass this but nothing else, what happens to the estate tax issue?
Representative Haas, nothing. You need legislation in order to change the estate tax.
If we pass this and nothing else, we would continue to have a state inheritance tax because this doesn't affect that aspect of it. We are not connected now to the federal changes in the estate tax, which is why we passed the inheritance tax bill in the fifth special session. If we do, and that's not within this bill at all. So if we pass this and do nothing else, we still would have a state inheritance tax, which is why we'll see a separate bill, or actually maybe even a couple of bills, to give us options on how to address the issue of the state inheritance tax.
Okay, thank you.
This is income tax only.
Correct.
Okay. Other questions, comments? We've got some folks in the room. Deborah, did you want to say anything about... Oh, I'm sorry. You're calling my attention to...
Okay.
Deborah Buchanan. No? If you've got some. Sure. We're in work session... Joe Schweinart, Rob Douglas, we're in our session, but I'll invite you guys, too, if you want to come on up. It's a small group today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. I'll just speak to the administrative aspect of this. It does make some changes for the department. It does increase some work. We won't be asking for money or positions to do that. We've done this before. Prior to 97, we had a fixed date for 15 years, so we'll go back to doing that and trying to explain to taxpayers what they need to do to conform to whatever you decide to do, but we'll be fine with whatever you decide.
Okay. Thank you.
Any
questions for Deborah? All right. I mean it, Joe, Rob, either of you want to speak to either the bill or the amendments? Okay, you're just here to watch. Joe Schweinhardt can't resist that clarion call to the desk.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt with Associated Oregon Industries. I would just say that I hate to see us disconnect from potential economic incentives, but I certainly understand the situation we're in. I certainly understand that nobody really knows what we're looking at yet and when we're looking at it from the federal level. So all things considered, we understand where you are, and we'll sit back and listen.
Okay. Appreciate that. And Rob Douglas, having time to think about it, is moving to the table.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. This changes things.
Yeah.
But what I want the committee to know and the chair to know is that we will go back to our prior commitment, and that is each session we will come back to you and describe the changes in the federal tax code and go through that long, laborious days and days of hearings doing that so you can make some policy choices in the future. We will continue to do that.
Thanks, Rob. It is hard work. I guess we measure that workload against, in this case, potentially $92 million or more, depending on, we don't know, and that becomes a hard trade-off. But I appreciate that, and I think the message from your clients when they were in last week was kind of the same as yours. It's not something that we want to do, and it certainly is more convenient for everybody if we have that rolling connection. But again, in times of when the federal government is operating in deficit territory and we can't, that makes it hard to stay connected and still pursue our own particular state priorities, as well as know that when we budget an ending balance that we have any confidence that ending balance is going to stay still. Yes, if it may be changed by federal action over which we don't have any control. And we saw what happened to ending balances in this last couple of years.
Yeah, hold on. I have it right here, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you're the one holding it today.
Well,
right.
If it's not in my pocket, we're worried we might spend it.
We've been passing it around these last few days, so this is for security, so that no one knows where the ending balance is. Somebody's always got it in their pocket. Other comments from committee? This, I really do invite some discussion on this. As I say, my purpose today was to present this without any intent to move it, because this is a significant policy decision, and we can talk about it today. Otherwise, we'll just gavel this meeting and let it ruminate for a while, and we'll come back and revisit it. Well, we will in any event. But Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Elizabeth, is there any indication of timing on some of these federal issues? Do you have a crystal ball that says how quickly Congress might act on some of these bigger pieces that we could get closure? Is it just this can, you know, put it in the date certain kind of a thing and then next session deal with what finally comes out of this Congress? Is that basically the proposal?
Well, Representative Berger, the last time I called the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is the one who usually does the estimates and will produce those once they see even a bill draft, I mean, that was just during orientation a month ago. And, you know, they had no idea. So, I mean, I think when they don't have any idea, I don't know how, you know, we can really speculate. So there's a lot going on. I just think it's probably not real top on the agenda.
Yeah.
Representative Scott.
In regards to these estimates, I understand that there's a committee that makes these. What effect do they factor in for potential stimulus that may occur out of these? How do they come to these numbers, which, you know, may or may not be factual based upon if everything were to be passed, which the chances are relatively good that that's not going to occur. Do we ever do any scenarios of reduction from where the feds are?
Representative Scott, we have done some dynamic analysis on different components, like with the bonus depreciation and stuff. We did some feedback effects through OTM, but we have not done that with this particular proposal. And at the federal level, I don't think they use dynamic analysis to actually bring in some of the feedback effects that would be happening. But, you know, it's something that we can take more time once we see some firmer estimates to capture some of those feedback effects.
Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, sir. First a question and then maybe a comment. I'm assuming, it's just following on the last question, that because the federal tax is so much larger than ours, that any effect of tax changes on the economy in terms of increasing the economy or decreasing it or whatever are going to be larger as a result of federal law, tax law changes than state tax law changes, simply because of the amount of the tax. Is that a fair assumption or not, would you say?
Representative Barnhart, that's correct. I mean, they do give a bigger tax reduction and stuff. I mean, it's all proportional. And you can see, like, even for us, the feedback effects as far as, you know, the increase in Oregon tax liability from those reductions at the federal level, well, it comes through in that tax subtraction, which is now $3,500 for federal taxes. So that doesn't affect everyone. You know, there's some that could have a reduction in their federal tax liability and still not change the amount of the federal tax subtraction because they pay much more than $3,500. So there's some of that that would go on that you wouldn't even be capturing in feedback here in Oregon.
Paul Warner.
Mr. Chair, Paul Warner, let's say revenue. In terms of this discussion Representative Scott raised and Representative Barnhart, I think it's important to keep in mind how the forecast is done. It's done through a national forecast service. So that what that forecast service does is evaluate how this package or whatever package tax policy Congress carries out, how that affects the national economy. So if they calculate this will add jobs or stimulus or speed up the growth rate, we'll pick that up through our forecast process because we'll, in a sense, connect to that national forecast. So that's how that loops back in. Elizabeth commented about OTIM. Where we're really looking at with OTIM is what kinds of changes would change Oregon's relative position? What would affect us compared to other states? And most federal changes won't. That's usually state tax policy to have that impact. So we're going to pick up any kind of stimulus through our national forecast.
And Paul, I appreciate that comment because that kind of gets back to my point on this, that where we can serve the state the best is to improve our position relative to other states. And what all of these changes really do flow through on pretty much an even par basis across the states. And so our ability to make particular policy decisions to improve our position relative to other states are limited when those decisions may have a revenue impact, and we are already starting $92 million in the hole on par with all the other states without any particular advantage to Oregon. It costs a lot of money to begin with, and it makes it more difficult for us to make those policy choices that may position us better relative to other states. Representative Vertiger, then
could I follow up on that?
Sure.
Do you think that is the reasoning that these 17 states that have already disconnected went through, that they felt in other words, if the Bush plan changes and negatively impacts Oregon in some way, and we wouldn't be looking at a disconnect until the next session, which is already putting us more in the hole, I'm not sure I follow the reasoning here.
I don't know, Paul, you've probably looked at this on a national level. Can you identify a consistent policy reason why some states do and some states don't connect?
Well, you know, I think the reason for the disconnecting, one of the arguments that we've had and addressed and certainly came up in terms of the 97 discussion is our biennial legislative sessions. And that was one of the concerns, is that you've got a biennial session, then let's say something passes in July in Congress. Well, then you're really going to have a year and a half where you have a disconnection from the federal code. Most states go on an annual session,
right.
So they can review that and you'd have a little bit quicker turnaround. So I think that was one of the factors that came up. Of course, the other thing about other states is nobody's dependent on the personal income tax as we are, so they tend to look at it and as less of their primary revenue source as we do, and for a number of states it's not as large as their sales tax.
Representative Williams.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you letting me ask this question. I was looking and trying to follow your $92 million number, and I think I finally figured it out, but it's the 30 and the 60 there on that total income tax impact being added together. Am I right about that, Elizabeth? Is
yep.
that how that works?
That's
okay.
Right.
All right, I wanted to make sure I wasn't double counting. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, thank you. In reference to what you just said, Paul, or back a couple statements, if we take the projections from the stimuli that may be generated from this, I'm not fully understanding how you reference that to Oregon to get these numbers. I'm sorry, I'm just not following that.
Representative Scott, there is two different processes here. As we look at the national numbers in terms of what the estimated revenue impact, what Elizabeth has done is as she said, looked at a set of numbers that did not contain this dynamic element to them. So, you know, that this look is gives you the static analysis or what would happen if everything stayed the same. So that, you know, that feedback loop is going to be both positive and negative. It's going to tell you what that would be if everything stayed the same. When we do when the forecast is done, if this passes and then the forecast is done, it will embed what effect that has on the national economy. And as that happens, as you get a stronger national forecast, for example, if the forecast service says this is going to add 1% to the growth rate, it'll feed back through. You won't see a direct change in those estimates, but what you'll see is a higher revenue forecast than you would have seen otherwise. Because in other words, we'll have a higher income growth for the national economy, which feeds directly into the Oregon projections. And, you know, the other way we try to pick up these things, and the bonus depreciation is an example where we did try to be very specific about the dynamic effects of it. But something like that, for example, has a particular stimulus to capital spending, we'll pick that up in the state's econometric model because it's heavily weighted toward those capital spending industries. And therefore, when the national forecast shows these are stimulated by this tax policy, then we pick that up in our Oregon model because we're overrepresented in those industries like high tech, for example.
Representative Virgin.
Paul, let's kind of go back to what we did when we did it in 1997. And because they were such good times, if we had that decision to make today, then we would not be making that decision. But tell me, what was the basis for the decision in 97? Primarily, because we still were totally dependent on the income tax.
Well, you know, I think you have to look back on federal policy and what had been going on in terms of federal policy, and that's really what's driven, I think, our decisions. The decision to disconnect was made back in the early 1980s with the accelerated cost recovery, which was another rapid bonus depreciation type provision that passed in 1981. The legislature estimated those revenue impacts, I believe, in the neighborhood of $50 million, which at that time was much bigger than $50 million today. And so the decision was made, at the same situation you're in now, that we should disconnect from that provision. And at that time, the state went to connection to a date specific. So each session, you'd come into the legislature, the Revenue Committee would get a detailed bill, and if you look at that, you know, your CPA report that they went through with you last week, that the A section, the B section, the C section, the A section and the B section, you'd have to make a decision on each one of those. And then the C section, which is the small section, is the only one you have to make a decision on now. So that entire package would be part of your connection bill, and that decision would have to be made. But I think in terms of federal policy, one of the things to keep in mind is once the deficits got very large in the early 1980s, federal policy changed and became very much focused on the deficit. And so there were a number of provisions to try to broaden the tax base, to try to reduce the deficit, and this really carried on into the mid-90s. And so what happened with those connection bills was, by and large, they were revenue raisers on net. So, you know, they would be, most of them weren't large, but they had a net positive revenue impact on the state. So that kind of changed that whole dynamics of that discussion. So going into 97, that was kind of the recent history, was that, you know, people associated Reconnect with revenue increase. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that has largely been the case until the national economy went into recession, and then the federal government is back into an aggressive fiscal policy where they're actually reducing our revenue by trying to stimulate the economic growth. So that's kind of the change in the dynamics that's taken place in federal policy. And I think that's probably the biggest difference now in where you sit now compared to where they were in 97.
And there's a little bit of history that ties in with that on a piece that Elizabeth passed out last week when we looked at this. It's the Oregon Income Tax Reconnect Recent History. I think we used it, Paul, back in 97. Not much was happening at the federal level. And that is true. If you look in 1998, the connection netted an increase of about $1 million. Mm-hmm. In 1999, connection netted an increase of $1 million. Mm-hmm. 2000 looks like a reduction of about $27 million. These weren't big numbers, especially compared with mm-hmm. the way revenues were. And then 2001 and then 2002 is where we really see the big change with the Job Creation and Worker Assistance Act of 2002, with the $105 million impact on the 0103 biennium, and looking at 61. And it's interesting, though, you know, this is, I think, a good illustration, too, of how the federal policy can work in deficit for a few biennia and then show the stimulus effect. We don't have that long a time. That's our problem. If you look at this sheet that Elizabeth showed, looking at the 2002 Act, $105 million net reduction in 2001-03, a $69 million reduction in 03-05, but then you get, anticipating the stimulus effect, out 4 years yet from now, you start to see an increase, and I assume that's because of the, you know, we're starting to see that long-term stimulus effect flowing through in increased revenues. And that's, I think, going back to my point, that at the federal level, they can draw out those long horizons and stimulate the economy with deficit spending for 4 to 6 years, and our problem is we have to draw the books to a close at the end of every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say there isn't significant stimulus effect. It largely is a question of the timing, and rarely do you see the stimulus effect in the same year that you see the immediate revenue reduction. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, it's classic textbook anti-recession policy is what the federal government is doing, and that just has an effect on us because we can't, as you say, we can't run the deficits during that period.
Now, there'd be a constitutional amendment we could suggest.
Another thing I might point out, too, is keep in mind that they're still, even under a date-specific amendment such as you have, and under that type of law, we still are going to be affected by federal policy. Changes in tax rates in particular have a significant effect on us. If the federal government uses credits like investment tax credits to stimulate the economy, that helps us in terms of economic growth without reducing our tax base. You know, a classic example of an action that had a big effect on our revenue on a positive side in the 90s was the federal decision in 1996 to reduce capital gains. There was a significant reduction in capital gains at the national rate, increased the rollover of capital gains realizations at the time the market was very strong. We estimated at that time in 95-97 biennium that general fund revenue increased by over $100 million in the state because of that federal action. And see, that would not be affected by this type of date-specific amendment. That would still affect us.
Other questions, comments? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I thought your metaphor of a couple of meetings ago was extremely apt, the metaphor of the submarine and the dinghy. And I think it describes very, very well the kind of problem we have. And, of course, in the situation we face now with the federal government's policy being so unsettled with the conflict between the political parties and the position the president is taking, and the difficulty that we have in our own forecasting anyway as a result of the unsettled economic situation, seriously considering a fixed date for the reconnect, as the Dash 1 amendments propose, makes a lot of sense. It just reduces the complexity of the kind of forecasting that Oregon has to make in trying to figure out how much money we're going to have to spend during a very lean biennium. I hope that we consider this bill again soon and send it to the floor.
Well, that raises the question, Paul. I guess if assuming that Congress doesn't take action before we sign it, the forecast based on current law would not contemplate any of these revenue impacts. Yeah. And so that would be immediately hanging out there as a big unknown in terms of potential impact. We know it's there, but the forecast can't include that because the forecast is based on current law, and these things would still be prospective at that point. So again, it raises the issue of the unsettledness of the certainly the ending balance and where we stand with going forward into the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, there is kind of this separation. This gets back to, I think, to Representative Scott's point about how the forecast is done. When there's a national forecast, the national forecasters are, they're assuming there's going to be something done at the federal level because that's built into whatever their projection is. And so they're going to be adjusting that, and they'll make some statement on assumptions. But we don't have this explicit estimate that Lisbeth has provided you that the forecasters will build into it. That's the static part of the very specific revenue links between us and the national tax policy. So there is, in a sense, that general assumption about what happens to the economy as a result of it, but we don't have the specifics of the federal tax change, and therefore you're right. That's something that would be formally incorporated after the session, if it didn't pass until after the session. And that, that has factored into things like the 2% kicker calculation in the past.
Good discussion. Anything else today? Feel free. All right. Well, let's, again, we'll ruminate on this. One thing, maybe, Lisbeth, I'd be curious to know for the next time we look at this. These other states that are in this group of states that are connected on the rolling connect, I'd be curious to know, assuming that those states or most of them are probably in session, whether they have either taken action or if action is pending in those states on connection or disconnection. Mm-hmm. My conference in D.C. week before last, I think the prediction was that there would be a strong move among the states to disconnect because of the very issues that we're facing. But I'm just curious where that stands in some of those other states.
Just the ones that are in the same category as us.
Top group with us.
The automatics.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. With that, then, let me close the work session. Thank you, everybody, for a good discussion on House Bill 2186. And then we have some bill introductions. They're on the desk before you, LC 99. I'll just read the summary. Imposes surtax on income or corporate excise tax liability. That's a committee bill, not at the request of any identified source. LC 145 limits deduction for federal taxes paid to $3,000. Also a committee bill with no identified requester. LC 146 imposes surtax on income or corporate excise tax liability. Again, a committee bill with no requester. LC 2278 establishes dates on which Oregon inheritance tax laws adopt terms and provisions of federal income tax revenue code. This essentially, if I recall, is the special session 5. I think when I saw this, this was essentially the same as the special session 5 inheritance tax bill repeal. Again, as a committee bill, LC 2833, also a committee bill, creates the Revenue Forecast Board. This must follow from the discussion that we had a couple of weeks ago on the forecast process. Okay, so again, with the usual caveat that introduction of these LCs as committee bills does not signify any particular support or any support at all necessarily from the committee or from members of the committee, or that these bills will necessarily even get a hearing But as a courtesy and accommodation, the chair would move introduction of LC-99, LC-145, LC-146, LC-2278, and LC-2833 as committee bills, again, without any particular requesters or sponsors other than the committee on any of those. Is there any discussion? Any objection? All right. Those LCs are introduced. With that, then, we're adjourned. Thanks.